Hello, everybody. This is Lisa Robin Young of lisarobinyoung.com, and welcome to session 6 of the PEACE System, the Sanity Saving Priority Management System for Creative Entrepreneurs. Now, today's session will probably run a little shorter than the others because it's all about exiting with expectation and hope. Basically, this is the bow on the package. It's how you close your session each day so that you know you're moving in the right direction and that things will get accomplished. As a reminder, the last few weeks, we've taken a very in-depth look at a process that really only takes a few minutes. The longest part is generally prayer or meditation, and for some people, it's the brain dump. But the rest of the steps, you know, examining priorities, assessing must-dos, getting clarity, setting expectations, it takes minutes, sometimes seconds, especially after you've done it a while. This last step is probably the shortest for most everyone because you're basically wrapping everything up. In fact, if that were all I were going to talk about in this session, we'd be complete here in just a couple of minutes. But I also want to take some time to address some potential sand traps that might catch you as you begin fully implementing this process in your life, as well as kind of walk through the entire process step by step so that you get a feel for the flow of how it works. So, closing the system, exiting with expectation and hope. I didn't just throw this on the end of the system because the word peace ends with the letter E and I needed something that started with the letter E. Having closure in anything you do is actually good for your brain and the energy systems of your body. Wait staff in restaurants have demonstrated an uncanny ability to remember a person's order until it's delivered to the table, and then it basically falls out of their short-term memory. It has to do with the way the brain marks a task as incomplete. Until it's complete, it rests in a part of the short-term memory in the brain that forces you to keep putting energy towards it to remember why it's still incomplete. Hey, that thing is still incomplete. Hey, you still need to finish that task. Hey, that person's order still hasn't been delivered. And your brain keeps pinging you. That's what I call it. I say it's pinging you. It's pinging your brain to say, hey, don't forget about me. Hey, don't forget about me. Well, if you've ever been in a situation where you're trying to remember 45 different things, something gets lost. Something slips through the cracks. Something doesn't get remembered because, not because your brain's not working, but because your brain's working too hard. It's going in too many different directions. You're trying to put too much energy into too many different varied things, tasks, assignments, stuff you got to remember. And I can't remember the name of the law, but it's something, it's named after a guy, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it's how the brain can hold things in memory plus or minus seven, plus or minus two. So the average human brain can hold seven things in short-term memory, conscious memory, you know, plus or minus two. So some people can hold nine, some people can only hold five. And we talked about that before. So that's a function of your brain, and it's putting energy into all of those different things. So if you're putting all your energy in unfinished business, there's bound to be something that's slipping through the cracks. It's why I spent a lot of this year shifting my business away from multitasking of any kind. You simply have too much energy being spread out all over the place when you could really be focusing that into something useful. Think of the bowl of a spoon. If you want to stab through a cereal box, the bowl of a spoon isn't very focused. It takes a lot more effort to use the bowl of the spoon to cut a hole in the box than it would a knife because the knife is very sharp. It's focused. It will go through the box much more easily than the bowl of the spoon. If you live life like the bowl of the spoon, then you have to put out a lot more energy to accomplish something than if you're razor sharp and focused like the knife. Clearing the incompletions helps to resolve that unfocused energy. It's important, though, because I believe that it's necessary to have a process that has a definite closure. That way you know it's done. You know it's complete. There's nothing lingering out there. It also gives you a chance to begin practicing celebration. Yeah, I hear you. When we complete something, at least for me, I have a bad habit of not celebrating. So I'm in this boat with you guys. I look at an accomplishment and I go, okay, that's done. What's next? Okay. Instead of taking the time to recognize and celebrate the effort that I've put into something. And sometimes that's because I've not enough to something. Oh, it's not enough. It's not enough. I'm not finished. There's still more to do. Okay. Why would I celebrate something? Because it's supposed to be done. You know, I committed to writing this book, for example, and when we put it into pre-order, I almost didn't celebrate that. You know, even if your milestone from your vantage point seemed teeny weeny itty bitty, remember, we're creating a judgment-free zone. So all of that judgment about it's too small, it's not enough, it's itty-bitty, that doesn't mean anything, there's still all this other stuff to do, that's judgment. Yes, there may be other things to do, and you can celebrate right now the fact that this piece is done. Okay? We've got to give ourselves room and permission to celebrate even what seems like the smallest of wins. And there are days, believe me, there are days when I'm celebrating the fact that I got out of bed and took a shower, or that I have clean socks to put on my feet. You know, sometimes that's all I can celebrate in a day, but hey, I moved forward. I got that piece out of the way, so I'm going to celebrate it. You need closure for everything, but especially for this process. And you need to celebrate the fact that you've done it. You know, you're learning something new here, and you're training your brain to think in a different way about things. And if you constantly look at it as, oh, that thing I got to do, your brain starts to associate it as a punishment rather than as a reward or a benefit. So if you're training yourself to do something new, you want to celebrate that you're learning it, that you're getting the hang of it. Hey, this is coming along. All right, way to go. And your celebration would be something just that simple, just a, hey, all right, great job, Lisa, way to go. I'm so proud of you for doing that today. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but it needs to happen. You need to give yourself credit where credit is due, okay? Because you're training your brain to think differently. In fact, for me, exiting the system with hope and expectation is often as simple as just saying, thank you, God, closing my notebook, and putting everything away. It's kind of a little ritual that gives me closure so that I know that it's done and I can get cracking on my day's priorities. It's like when we say amen at the end of a prayer. Amen gives it closure. Amen lets us know when we're done. You know, everybody's sitting around the table at Thanksgiving and every person gets to go around and say something that they're thankful for. And if you stand there and they don't say amen, you don't know they're done. You're waiting and waiting and waiting. So we have to have these little symbolic closures in our lives, because it gives our brains the opportunity to focus that energy somewhere else. And you'll find a way to close everything that works for you. Maybe you'll sing a song or read a poem or just tidy your space up and get back to work. Doesn't have to be a big deal. Just something that is consistent that allows you to confirm in your mind that you've successfully completed the system for the day and you can move on to priority one on your to-do list. And it could just be a check mark on the calendar. Yep, I did it today. Whatever, just something, okay? It may be a simple thing, just closing up a shop. It may even seem silly or foolish to you to do it, but that is your negative self-talk having its way with you there, okay? We don't look at a little kid who's learning to walk and go, well, of course you're supposed to walk. What's wrong with you? Why would I celebrate you for taking your first steps? That's a given. Of course you're supposed to walk. Come on, get with the program, little adult. We don't do that to kids. Why do we do that to ourselves? We are taking our first new steps here, too, and they need to be acknowledged. They need to be celebrated. We need to go, great job. Way to go getting through the first stage of the peace system today. Way to go finishing the entire system for the first time today, for the second time, for the fourth time, for the 18th time, for the 894th time. Way to go. Good job. I'm proud of myself for taking this action to improve my life. Okay? So there's a method to the madness here, okay? And there are also some traps and pitfalls that you're going to need to be aware of, especially as you're learning and practicing the peace system for the first few weeks. And some of you may have already started to encounter some of these, okay? And that's what I'm going to spend a good portion of the call discussing, these little sticky things that might crop up for you as you get started in the process. The first is just what we've just talked about, that need for completion and celebration. But then there's more. You know, I know some people will try and skip the grounding and centering. You know, or the first few times that they do sit down to do it, they're going to feel anxious, like they can't sit still, or they can't sit still long enough to be still. You know, something's pinging at them. They're hearing all these voices, all this stuff's in their head, and their brain won't shut off or shut up. Here's why that happens. It is totally normal, especially if you have no experience with meditation or sitting still, which was me. I had, Lisa doesn't sit still. Well, Lisa didn't sit still. Lisa's much better at it now. Lisa can sit still now. But this is kind of the game that your brain plays. Your mind, your brain, needs downtime to release a chemical called cortisol, okay? It builds up in your system. It's the fight or flight response trigger in your body. And the more active you are, the more anxious you get, the more this cortisol stays in your bloodstream. It's, you know, they say it's what contributes to belly fat and other things like that. When your tension stays high, the cortisol stays in your bloodstream, it stays in your brain. And tension is a precursor to oxygen deprivation in your muscles. And what ends up happening is it starts to demonstrate itself in your body as an addictive property. Okay, so you actually get stressed out and you get addicted to being stressed out because it's familiar to you and you can't do anything but be stressed out. You get hyped up, you can't do anything but be hyped up because your brain is acting like it's addicted to being hyped up. Okay, because your body gets used to this new thermostat set point of, okay, things are just more stressful now. It's why a mom can go for a year with a really horrible, rotten sleep schedule because they've got a newborn, but they don't function that way once their kids are grown up. Because the body says, okay, we've got a new normal, we've got a new set point, and this is where we're going to live, and we got to learn how to do the best we can with what we've got. And so you're doing that to your body all the time if you don't give yourself the space to let that stuff dump out of your head. Yes, the voices won't stop yakking at me. There are times when I lay my head down to bed and there's so much mind chatter, echoes of conversations that I've had, stuff that I can't tell if I'm starting to dream or if it's just unloading out of my head. And that is more chronic for me on days when I have not sat down to do my meditation, I've not sat down to ground and center myself, and it comes back. So this is a lifestyle change that you have to get used to. You need to give yourself time and space for quiet stillness. One of the inscriptions in the Secret Watch is all about that. It says, find quiet stillness daily. It doesn't say find 4 hours of quiet stillness. It doesn't say take 20 seconds of quiet stillness. It's about finding what you need to give yourself peace. And maybe in the beginning, you have all you can do to sit in a chair for 5 minutes and not fidget, now, let alone let your brain shut off for a minute. Okay, so sit for 5 minutes. Use a guided meditation. Watch a candle flame flicker. All of those are tools to help you shake off all of the tension that's sitting inside you, collecting more cortisol, and give you an opportunity to just release. Find something to fix your gaze on, whether it's a candle flame, a picture, a person's face, the cover of a book, any of those things that will help you release all of that chaotic energy that's inside you and give yourself a point of focus so that everything else can fall away. That happens during meditation the more you practice it. But for the first week, you're going to be lucky if you can do 30, 60 seconds, 5 minutes. You're going to be really lucky if everything gets quiet and you really feel quiet. The first few times, you're going to feel a lot of tension, like, why am I sitting here? You're going to hear your negative self-talk chattering on and on. And you just acknowledge it and go, okay, I hear myself. I hear my negative self-talk. Okay, and I'm still going to sit here for another 4 minutes and 42 seconds. Okay, and I'm still going to sit here for another 4 minutes and 12 seconds. Okay, and maybe you just have to tick down the seconds, and that's all you can do to stay focused. That will improve over time. But if you don't give yourself that time and space for quiet stillness, the cortisol builds up in your bloodstream, your tension continues to rise, it's not uncommon for people to start having panic attacks, anxiety problems, serious stress issues, and I don't even go down the road of heart issues and things like that with chronic stress. If you don't have 3 to 5 minutes to give to yourself to ground and center, eventually you'll end up in the hospital and you'll be forced to take that time all in one big chunk. Give yourself permission to feel uncomfortable and do it anyways until the comfort starts to come. When I first started meditating, it took me a good week before I didn't feel anxious. And I was still getting all the chatter and all the other stuff, but then I recognized I don't feel anxious. I look at the clock and it's only been 2 minutes. Ugh. And then one day it was 5, and then one day it was 10, and I'm like, holy cow, holy cow, I'm doing it. And you can too. If a busy body like me can do it, you can too. It's just about being still. So if you don't want to spend time draining all the adrenaline pumping through your body, you know, where it's all built up, then you need to spend time doing this because you get trained to stay that way, and that's just plain old yucky, okay? The other side of that coin is we can't stay focused all the time. Focus is important. Meditation is a release, and it's also a focusing. You focus inward. You focus on a specific thing. You listen to a voice during guided meditation. But we have to have unfocused or open-focused times. We talked a bit about open focus in our last session. It's important that you have that time where your mind can just wander and travel and make new connections. That's part of the whole brain concept. See, this isn't just about scheduling your day, folks. This is about becoming a better human being. And you can only do that when you're using all of your faculties, both sides of your brain. So you have to be able to nourish yourself. And this is a daily process. So that's the other thing I want to kind of hint at here, or maybe even stand on a desk about here, because this is important. Yes, there's a system. Yes, it's customizable. And so within that structure, there are some quote-unquote certain ways to do things. And I want to encourage you to learn it that way first so that you understand the structure. An architect doesn't just go outside and say, hey, I'm going to build a building. An architect goes to school, learns architecture, learns what the rules are for architecture, and then says, all right, now that I understand what the parameters are, I'm going to create my own design. And maybe some of them will fly in the face of some of that structure, and maybe some of them won't, because gravity is kind of important. It's a law that most of us can't defy with regularity, okay? So in that case, there are some structures that you need to kind of abide by. But I don't want that to prevent you and fall into the trap of perfectionism, okay? This isn't about being perfect in doing the system, because even just doing one step in the system is going to help you significantly. One step, just doing one step a day or two or three steps as you're starting to learn it. That's why we started right away with, okay, first week, your homework is to just make a list. Get practice at doing step one. Even just doing step one is going to help you. When you can do step one and step two, you're going to see more results. When you can do three steps, more results. When you do four steps, more results. When you can do all five steps in the system, you're going to see even greater results. But I don't want to get hung up on perfection. This is about progress. This is a lifetime change for you, not something that you're going to do for four weeks and see success and be like, okay, now I'm done with that. I have been using the Peace System for over 4 years, and I continue to use it in my life. And my life gets completely out of whack when I fall away from it and I don't use it. On the days when I've gone several days without meditating or several days without prayer, everything in my life is all kinds of screwed up. My schedules don't work. Things get out of whack, out of focus. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And I'm like, well, the reason it's not working is because I'm not doing this. I got to get back to doing this. So believe me, I understand that life happens and things get incredibly busy and, you know, oh my gosh, I got a call from the principal and I got to be at the school tomorrow and I wasn't planning to be there and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Sometimes you're going to fall away from the Peace System. Again, it's a judgment-free zone. Just pick it back up and get back into it. Progress, not perfection, okay? It's not about doing everything exactly right. It's about doing what you can to see better results in your life. And there's a structure that we've created to help support that, but do what you can. Do what you are able to do. And then the last thing I would offer up is the idea of staying on target with your must-dos and getting them out of the way as fast as possible. In your planning of your day, in your creating of your schedule, and you've got this list of to-dos, and you've got the must-dos that you know you've got to handle, and you've created space in your calendar for some EMDs to crop up, it's very easy to say, oh, well, I've got all this space, so I'm going to just, you know, sprinkle this thing in here, and sprinkle this thing in here, and sprinkle this thing in here, and then poof, some of your must-dos don't get done. And I've done it. I still do it from time to time. It's really easy to get distracted. So when at all possible, Schedule those must-dos to be the absolute first things that you tackle during your workday. Schedule those things first. Now, I understand that you can't schedule your son's wrestling match that happens at 5 o'clock in the evening as the first thing that you do during the day. I understand that. Totally clear on that. However, you need to be making sure that you've got the space around it. You're not trying to cram stuff in right at the deadline. Oh, I'll just do one more thing here, or I'll make one more phone call here. You need to be ready and present so that at 5 o'clock, you are there for your son's wrestling match. Likewise, you need to not try and slip in 10 or 12 more things around the must-do activities you've got scheduled in the morning. Say, oh, well, you know, while I'm out, I'll do this too. That's a surefire way to make sure that your most important must-dos don't get done. I am all for saving energy and saving gas and grouping errands. I also know how grouping errands can lead you down a rabbit hole and then have you not get those most important things done because, well, I was just going to stop into the store and pick up this one thing on my way, and then I found out I had a flat tire, and then I had to deal with this, and then I had to deal with that, and I just never got that thing done. Instead of sticking to the must-dos and getting them out of the way first. Now, a tip that I will share with you is if you know you're going to be grouping activities and there is potential that you might have some other things that crop up in the middle, like, oh, you were going to go grocery shopping because that was a must-do activity and, you know, you were also going to stop at the post office, and you've got a pretty good shot at knowing that you might bump into somebody you know at the post office, schedule extra time for that stop into your calendar. If stopping at the post office is supposed to be a 15-minute trip, but you're grouping activities, schedule 30 minutes for that trip. Because that way, if somebody bumps into you while you're there, you've still got 5 to 10 minutes that you can chat with them and then get out of there and not put yourself behind schedule. The number one problem that we as creatives have is we under-schedule our time and over-schedule our commitment. We underestimate the amount of time that we think it's going to take to do something because we've got so many things to do. And I said this before, the sooner you get clear on how much time it really takes for you to do something, and then you honestly put that much time in your calendar for that project, task, or undertaking, the easier and more free your life will be because you will start having these open pockets of time going, wow, it didn't take me 40 minutes to go to the grocery store today. It only took me 20. I've got 20 minutes left in my life. I'm going to read that book I wanted to read. I'm going to fill in with the distractions and the interruptions. But do the must-dos first when at all possible. And then you can use that EMD space cushion that you're creating in your day to pick up the slack on some of those distractions or interruptions. But you have the same 24 hours that every other human being has. And if you're not getting things done, it's because of how you specifically have prioritized and chosen to prioritize your life and your day. And I sound a little bit hard-assed on this, but there's a reason. It's because you're too nice. And I don't say that to encourage you to be evil and mean and nasty. I say it to encourage you to value yourself and your time more. My science teacher in seventh grade, I had her both years, she had a sign on the wall that said, a lack of planning on your part does not constitute a dire emergency on my part. Which means I can come to her bleeding and dying and like, oh my God, I cut my hand off because I wasn't paying attention to the science instructions, and she would be like, well, go clean yourself up. And that sounds evil and hostile and mean, and we all thought she was a little mean when we first met her, but we also understood that she was training us on how to treat her and how to respect ourselves. If she jumped at every little something-something that the kids in that class did, we would have owned her. We would have owned her by the end of the first semester. She would have been our little puppet dancing all over the room for us. And she set boundaries, and she said, uh-uh. I have rules. You follow the rules. Everything's good. You don't follow the rules, there are consequences. And if that means you chop off your hand because you weren't following the rules, you're the one who has to clean up your chopped off hand. Now, fortunately, no one in our class got our hands chopped off. But do you see what I'm saying? Do you understand that concept of taking responsibility and setting boundaries and then enforcing them? throughout this process and throughout your life. And it comes back to valuing yourself. If you're constantly letting other people's little freak out freak you out, you know, your six-year-old little girl comes to you and she's having a meltdown and you have to drop everything you're doing to tend to her meltdown, well, then she's got you trained. If, on the other hand, you've trained her to say, look, when mommy is on the phone or when daddy is working in his shop, you don't get to just burst in and scream out and yell and bloody murder and all of that. Unless someone is genuinely dying or there's a killer in the house, you don't behave that way. And I am just as guilty of this as anybody who might be listening to this program, because I have a teenage son who I went through this whole process with. It was excruciating. And now I have, you know, a six-year-old that I'm going through this process with again. And yes, putting those boundaries in place and enforcing them takes longer than you want it to. But once they're in place, the freedom. Yes, it's stressful setting up the boundaries. Yes, it's stressful to enforce the boundaries. Yes, sometimes you ask yourself, oh my God, are they ever going to get it? Is this ever going to work? And then you start to see, oh, they're not testing that boundary anymore. My sister made a comment to me when my oldest was about the age of my youngest right now. And she said, you know, it's interesting to me. He never argues, fights, or yells at you when you ask him to put a seatbelt on in the car. He just does it. But other things you ask him to do, he throws a fit about. I wonder why. And I got to thinking, and it's like, well, because he knows we don't go anywhere if the seatbelt doesn't get put on, the car just sits. Huh. Because that was a boundary that I enforced unequivocally, no questions, no remarks, no fights, no arguments. You don't put the seatbelt on, we don't go. Period. And if it takes an extra 40 minutes because you don't want to put your seatbelt on, well, then we're 40 minutes late. Or I start planning to leave 40 minutes earlier. And the fighting and the arguing stopped. They put the seatbelt on and it's no big deal. But other things, he would push and push and fight and argue and yell and throw fits until I finally said, no, this won't happen until you do that. Period. End of discussion. Cry if you want, you'll go to your room. Break stuff if you want, you'll go to your room. We have to be willing to do that, not just with our children, but with ourselves and with everyone around us. We only have 24 hours a day. How you choose to use those 24 hours truly is entirely up to you. Even if you have a baby, even if you have children, even if you have a boss, even if you have all of those things, in any given moment, you are the one choosing how you are going to spend your life. Now, you may have signed over that authority to someone else, like a boss or whatever, for a period of time during the day, but you chose to sign that time over to them. And maybe you chose to sign that time over under different pretenses. Well, I thought I was signing it over for this. Well, but you still signed it over. You still made the choice. You still gave up the right to choose in that moment. Now, here's the thing. You can take back that right at any time. At any given moment, you can say, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't want to work here. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be your mom. I'm not going to take you there today. I am not going to do this. I'm going to do this instead. There are consequences. Don't be fooled. There are consequences for those choices. Deciding you don't want to be someone's parent is a pretty big choice that comes with a pretty big consequence. But only you can answer the question of whether or not you're willing to live with those consequences. There are people who give up parental rights every day, every single day. Some kid is losing their parents. It's a travesty in our society, but it's happening nonetheless. And people make that choice every day. I don't want to be your parent anymore. So you don't get to say, I don't have that choice. You absolutely do have that choice. Your conscience and your spirit and your love for your children will probably cause you to choose otherwise. I'm going to continue to be their parents, thanks, because I really love them, and the way they irritate me is only temporary, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But don't think that you don't have the choice. Don't think that you don't have the choice to leave where you're currently at. You absolutely do. You got 2 feet, start walking. Will it be uncomfortable? Probably. In some parts of the world, it's pretty cold right now. So walking might be really, really cold and not pleasant at all. But don't think you don't have a choice. You absolutely do. They are tough choices. Some choices are much more incredibly difficult than others to make, but you have them. The statement that's closer to the truth is, I am not willing to accept responsibility for making that choice. I am not willing to accept the consequences of making that choice. And that is the truth about your reality. That is the truth about your current situation. That is the truth about why you haven't achieved what you want to achieve, why you're not where you're wanting to be, why you're not doing what you want to do, and why things in your life are not going according to the plan that you want. Because you have not made the choice to accept the consequences of whatever would have to happen in order for you to get that thing, go to that place, be that person. Now, having said all of that, I want you to take a deep breath, because that isn't always a bad thing. I choose to stay married every day. I choose to stay a mother every day. I choose to have this business every day. I choose to get up and get out of bed every single day. And there's a variety of reasons for that, because the consequences I want to experience in my life, I want to feel the consequences of being a mom when they say, I love you, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, here's a big old squeezy hug. I want those consequences. So I choose to be a mom. I want to be able to have the freedom to teach a class in the middle of the day and then go take a nap or go pick up my child from school or go travel somewhere. So I choose to have a business that I can run from anywhere in the world. And the consequence of that is I have to do things differently than a person who's got a 9-to-5 job. And I'm okay with that. So remember that every choice has a consequence on both sides of the fence. There's a trade-off. We call it opportunity costs in economics. There's an opportunity cost. When you make one choice, it means you automatically have to let another choice go. When you make one choice, it comes with a certain set of consequences, which means you don't get a different set of consequences. And sometimes that's the benefit that you're looking for. You know, my husband is quite content to be an employee for the rest of his life because he likes the predictability of set schedule, set pay, set what people that you work with. He likes the stability and the predictability of that. I learned a long time ago that that drives me crazy. So I've chosen something else, and it comes with a different set of consequences. The consequences are my income's a little more unpredictable. My schedule is a little bit more unpredictable. And it comes with other benefits. I have freedom. I can take a day off whenever I want to or need to. He has to schedule his stuff in advance. I don't. Different consequences for different choices. And when you can look at a choice and go, I am not willing to accept the consequences of making that choice, so I am going to choose a different option and take the consequences that go along with that, then you're looking at the truth of the 24 hours of your day. I'm choosing to sleep for 8 hours today instead of 10. I'm choosing to sleep for 6 hours today instead of 8. I'm choosing to stay up later so that I can sleep during the day, etc. And yes, there are consequences that go with that. Don't lull yourself into thinking that making a choice doesn't have a consequence. It absolutely does. I'm working with a theater company right now, and one of our actors consistently is late to rehearsal, doesn't have their lines memorized, doesn't have their blocking down, and shows up already late for rehearsal saying, I haven't eaten anything. Well, why haven't you eaten anything all day? Well, because I had this thing to do with my job, and I had this thing to do, and I'm on commission, so I have to stay there, and I have to work, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no.
You have the same 24 hours in the day that the rest of us do. Why didn't you pack a lunch? Why didn't you grab a snack? Why didn't you stop at the fast food place when it was right next door to the place that you were doing the demo? Why didn't you, you know, that's someone who's not planning. That's someone who's using no time as an excuse instead of recognizing that the consequences are a direct result of the choices that they've made. And I know this sounds pretty heavy-handed. I know this sounds kind of firm and you know, but what about? And I'll be the first one to tell you, there are exceptions to everything. But if you live your life based on the exceptions, your life will not be exceptional. It will be mediocre. It will be less than mediocre. It will be miserable. You will always be at the mercy of everybody else and their whims and their schedules and their plans and their dreams and their ideas and their goals. And what about you? What about you? Give yourself permission to celebrate, to complete, to experience the satisfaction of the consequences of the choices that you've made, the empowering choices that you've made. This is your journey. This isn't anybody else's. There was a time when I couldn't understand why a person would give their kid up for adoption. And then I recognized, that's their journey. That's not my journey. For me, I can't do that. That's my journey, not their journey. For a long time, I couldn't understand why, you know, certain people would behave certain ways. And then I recognized, you know what? That's their journey. That's not my journey. And yeah, that certain person may be my child or my spouse or my good friend or my family member or a client or a colleague, et cetera, but that's their journey, not mine. My journey is what it is and what it has to be. And as long as I'm living my life in integrity and in alignment with my essential why and my path, there are always going to be people who will say, oh, you're so inspiring and oh, I look up to you. And there will be other people who will go, I do not understand why you do the things that you do. You are crazy. Why do you do that? I think that's wrong, et cetera, et cetera. It's your path. Where are you taking it? It's your journey, not anybody else's. All right. So I want to just kind of quickly walk through the process one more time with you guys so that we're clear on how this works. You begin with prayer and meditation. It doesn't have to be long and elaborate. It just needs to be something to allow you to clear your mind, relax a bit, and focus yourself inward on what really matters. Some people just meditate on their essential why. Some people use a guided meditation. The point of this step is to get you focused and get all of the clutter out of your head. Prayer is where you let things out, you brain dump, you get these things off your chest. Meditation is where you're in stillness so that you can continue the clearing and clearing space, but also to receive whatever impressions are coming at you. This is a time to connect to the divine, whatever that means for you. It gives you a physical sense, an emotional sense of peace. From there, you're going to lay out all your expectations for the day. These are all the things that I think I got to do, all my must-dos, and you're going to sort them all out. And then you're going to move into the third step of assessing, what do I really have to do here? What really has to be done? I've got this extra long to-do list that I've created here. What's really going to get done? And then you move into the fourth step, clarifying everything. Why did I not do this today? Why has it been on the list for 3 days? What am I going to do differently? How am I going to decide what to do with this? Is this going to be something that I have to do? I'm going to put it on the calendar, schedule it so it's not stressful. Or I'm going to say, you know what? I'm not doing it. It's gone. It's off the list. It's off my radar. It's not going to be one of those unfinished things in my brain. Then you've got a list of this is what I'm going to tackle for today. And you close and you say, okay, I'm all set. I'm done. Thank you. Big check mark. Smiley face. Sing a song. Dance around the room. Congratulate yourself for doing the process. Take the time to give yourself that little, all right, one day down, done. Now let's get to work on these. Let's tackle these must-dos. Let's get them done. and then you do them. It can be that quick for some people. I mean, I would think it would take a little bit longer for prayer and meditation than, you know, a couple of minutes it took to explain that. But that's it. That's all there is to it. You take the time to focus yourself. You take the time to offer up everything that's going on with you. And then you take time to receive and fill yourself up emotionally and spiritually. And then you say, okay, what do I really have to do today? What's really on the list? And which of these things is really going to get done, knowing what my schedule is going to be like today? And then, all right, let's do it. We're done. It doesn't have to be complicated. And you can make this fit whatever lifestyle you have. You can be super busy and this works for you. You can be super laid back and this works for you. I've not seen anybody who could not find a way to get this to work for them, which is why I've been using it for 4 years, because everything else I've tried was like, it ain't happening. So I said that this session was going to be a little bit shorter, and I'm not showing any questions in the queue. So if you do have any questions about this, if anything comes up even after the course, shoot me an email. info@lisarobinyoung.com, and we will do our best to help you with anything that comes up. This process doesn't work if you don't work it. So I don't want you getting stuck. I don't want you to feel like, oh, she gave me this thing and now I'm on my own. Yeah, you're kind of on your own, but at the same time, we're here to support your growth. We're here to support you becoming the person that you are meant to be in the world. Creative entrepreneurs have amazing gifts, and oftentimes they feel incredibly isolated in bringing those gifts to the world, and I don't want this to be one of those times. We are here to support and encourage and help you. All you have to do is reach back out to us. And with that, I am going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for participating in this powerful, I think, program to help you get your sanity back and get your life and your priorities in order. The Peace System, my sanity saving priority management system for creative entrepreneurs, stands ready to help you, as does our team. So again, thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you in another program soon.